Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to LG Equipment's Q1 FY23 conference call hosted by Asian Markets Securities Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. Actual results may differ from such expectations, projections, et cetera, whether expressed or implied. Participants are requested to exercise caution while referring to such statements and remarks. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kamlesh Kotak from Asian Markets Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you.
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of Asian Markets, we welcome you all to the 1Q FY23 earnings conference call of LG Equipment Limited. We have with us today Mr. Jairam Varadaraj, Managing Director representing the company. I request Mr. Jairam to take us through an overview of the quarterly results and the business performance, and then we shall begin the Q&A session. Over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Kamlesh. Thanks always for organizing this analyst investor call. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for participating. It's my pleasure to be with you this evening. I'm presuming you haven't had too much time to delve into the numbers that we have just published for our Q1. At a very broad level, our sales has grown by 42%. But before I talk too much about the sales part, I would like to first, as always, give you a reconciliation of the EBITDA compared to the previous year Q1. Taking the same contribution level at a material cost, we should have had, considering the growth, we should have had an EBITDA of close to 1,400 million, as against that we had close to about 800 million. The biggest cost has been, one has been the return of some of our overheads. You know, business has come back to normal, and therefore there has been an increase in our overheads. And of course, people costs have also gone up because, you know, it's been 2 years. In the first year, there was no revision, and the second year, there was a very marginal revision, and the market for talent right now is quite buoyant. So these were the two reasons that really bridge the difference between what our EBITDA should have been and what we came out with. So I will rely on your questions to go deeper into the profit numbers. So stepping back and looking at the sales, as usual, I'll start with Australia and then work my way west. Australia was better than last year, but not as good as what we had anticipated it to be. Southeast Asia continues to be a challenge because they still had some remnants of COVID, but things seem to be picking up and coming back there. India had a good solid run across all the verticals. There were some challenges in terms of pricing. I'll come back and talk about that. Moving to the Middle East was not as good as it should have been. There are certain markets in which we grew and certain markets were challenging. And of course, South Asia, especially Sri Lanka, was a big problem. Europe continues to be strong in terms of our top line growth. So our overall project to incubate Europe is on track, and we are continuing to push it. We need to optimize the business model, which we are continuing to do, and we're continuing to increase the size of the team there and expanding our reach, and things are going as per plan. Moving on to North America, we had an excellent Q1 in North America across all the business verticals. So the all the years of initiatives that we have run are beginning to show the results. So it has been very positive in North America, and Brazil, of course, continues to be strong. Our automotive equipment business had a very solid growth, and that's partly because the Q1 of last year was very, very poor for the, especially the automotive equipment business. So it had very good growth. So if I look at the total growth at a consolidated level, it's about 42%. Out of that 42%, 28% came from volume, and 12% came from price, and 2% came from exchange rate. Now, you may be wondering why our exchange rate contribution to growth is so muted. You got to remember that we have our other than India presence is equally split between Europe and the US. So while the dollar appreciated quite significantly, the euro actually depreciated. So net the contribution of exchange rate has been only 2% compared to a lot of other companies that have been publishing with far higher gains on exchange rate. Overall, if I have to make a longer term assessment, we said in by 2025-26 we will touch $450 million with a 16% EBITDA and a 30% ROCE. We are well on our way there. The only at the moment the sales number and the EBITDA number seem to be tracking in the right direction towards that. We had a temporary setback on ROCE for the simple reason that we had to invest quite significantly in inventory, not only in the plant, but also in our subsidiaries because of huge supply disruptions that we faced. And we didn't want to be left flat-footed without machines when the order was there. So, in fact, that has paid off. In fact, some of our growth can be attributed to the fact that we had availability in the market for immediate supplies to the customer. So there has been a, I think we have close to about 80-85 crore. I would not say 85 crore is a full defect, but I would say out of that 85 crores, I would say about half of it is inventory, which we will try and bring down. The other half of it is, you know, we've been having VAT challenges in the GST. Considering that we have a huge international or export business to our subsidiaries, which does not attract GST. So we have a lot of surplus input credit, which technically that money should be refunded to us, but that is something that the government is hesitating to do. They are taking a longer term to do that. So we have to kind of, from a accounting point or kind of procedure point of view, we have to pay GST on export even though it is not, and then claim a refund on that. So that seems to be the circuitous way. Because of that, some amount of money, capital is stuck there. We are hoping that it will get resolved. Similarly, in Europe, we have close to about 4 million euro worth of VAT credit that is sitting there. We are going to give a bank guarantee. It's a temporary phenomenon. They want to establish credibility of the company before releasing it. So we are giving a bank guarantee as a substitute for credibility for the government and then getting that money released. So I think in the next quarter, we should be able to release quite a bit of this capital out of our working system. So even as we speak now, the supply situation seems to be improving far better than what it was certainly in Q4 of last year and the early part of Q1. Things are improving both on the import side as well as on the buying side as well as on the selling side. Even on the export side, we are finding that availability of containers is a lot better. The freight lead times are far shorter, so that gives us the freedom to work with lesser inventory in our subsidiaries, as well as freight rates are beginning to come down. So still far away from what it used to be many before COVID, but it seems to be correcting in the right direction. So I would say this is a kind of a position. I'll come to the last part before we start asking questions. One is the challenge of raw material prices, which was a huge problem in 21-22. The volatility was high and the frequency with which prices changed was very high. So we went through some serious challenge in terms of our margins. We took a very firm view end of last financial year, and we tried to increase prices, correct prices in the market. We are still in the middle of that. So we are not confident that all of the price corrections that we had, that is required to cover the full cost increases that have happened, we will be able to realize. We are still analyzing what the possibilities are. But what you're seeing now is a situation where the on the front end selling was at relatively subdued prices because the revision had not taken full effect. But on the back end side, the costs were fully kind of booked in terms of cost. The new costs were fully booked. So I would expect that going forward, the margins in the worst case will continue to be as strong, and the expectation is at some point there may be a slight uptick, but it's still too early days. There are uncertainties around it, so I can't make a firm statement on that. So this is really the summary of Q1, and I'll be happy to take your questions. Thank you, sir.
We will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to take yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Ravi Swaminathan from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Congrats on a very good set of numbers. My first question is with respect to demand, especially the India market. So basically, how is the nature of demand as we speak compared to what it was, say, 3 to 4 quarters ago? Which are the top 4 or 5 sectors, subsectors or industries which are driving the demand? If you can give your broad thought process, it would be great.
Hi Ravi, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So, first quarter, India was continued to be strong, but the trajectory of growth compared to the various quarters of the previous year, the trajectory was not there, but it continued to remain strong at those levels. So, but it's still early days. My expectation is, considering that, you know, in a global environment when almost $3 trillion of stimulus amount which was pumped in has been withdrawn, and then you have geopolitical uncertainties, and you also have individuals beginning to spend more of their money on services like vacation and travel. And on top of it, inflation pressures across the world. One would expect that there has to be some level of softening of this demand. We yet to see it, but we believe that in the third quarter we will start seeing something of that nature, and we are prepared for that. As far as industry verticals, like I've always maintained, all the verticals are firing. There's no one vertical, I would say, has performed disproportionately higher than the other.
Got it, sir. Between, say, infra demand and industrial demand, which one is stronger broadly? But at least you can give a broad thought process.
I think, I mean, you know, when you look at the nature of our sales, you know, our dependence on infra in actual monetary terms as a percentage has been always very small, right? Yes, the inquiry levels in cement and in steel are all quite strong, but even when they materialize, they don't constitute a big percentage. So cut short my response, it is industrial that is really driving.
Got it, sir. And with respect to margins for the standalone business, so basically other costs had jumped up significantly. Should we kind of look at the same run rate of other costs as a percentage of sales for both other costs and both employee costs also? So basically, if you can.
No, employee cost, what you see in Q1 is what is the revision. That will not continue to increase at the same pace. It is just a, it is going to multiply probably into 4, right?
Yeah, correct.
As far as other fixed costs are concerned, I expect the same behavior, but you've got to understand, both those costs were at very low levels in the prior year.
Got it, sir. Thanks a lot, sir. I'll come back in the queue.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Harshit Patel from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is on the current economic situation in Europe. So, given the current situation, could there be a delay in our plans to ramp up sales and reach a break-even point in FY24? Or could it play the other way around in the sense that the competitiveness of Europe's local players may come down and we might be able to gain even more market share from them, higher than what we are expecting right now? So how do you think it could play out in your opinion?
So actually, like, you know, we are seeing a very paradoxical situation existing in the whole world. You know, earlier it was COVID. And now it's the Ukraine war, right? There was a lot of press during the peak times of COVID, except for that first quarter of April, May, June 2020, which was really the first quarter of COVID. After that, the whole world decided to just ignore COVID and made results happen, right? So it was. So that was one. And second, when the Ukraine war happened, it's the same thing. There was a lot of press saying that this is going to happen. There's going to be a total collapse. There's going to be chaos. All this is going to happen. Nothing happened, right? Business is going on as usual. Now, I'm beginning to feel that citizens of the country recognize crises, but they don't go into a shell and behave in an extreme fashion in response to these crises. They are taking a very moderated perspective and life is going on. So even in Europe, if I look at some of our competitors' performance in Europe who are mature players with large market share, they've done well. And for us who are at the bottom of the market, any turbulence at the top of the surface is irrelevant for us. Because our market share is so small, you know, it's like the fish at the bottom of the ocean. So what if there is a storm at the top? It doesn't matter for that fish, right?
Sure, understood, sir. So my second question is on our outlook on the CAPEX plans for the next 2 to 3 years. You have earlier mentioned that you were planning to consolidate all the manufacturing operations in a single campus. So, any visibility as to when you will start that process, or it is still too much far in the future?
Well, we have already kick-started the idea and the planning for it. We have not put any money on the ground for the campus yet, but we have decided that we are going to do it, and I expect some little bit of amount being spent this year, either in planning or consulting for that kind of a amount will be spent. But I expect in the next 2 to 3 years, we will ramp up our expenditure for the new campus. So that's, as far as the amounts are concerned, it's a little too early, but as soon as the plans are crystallized, I'll come back and talk about what we're planning to spend for our move from for the consolidation.
Sure, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much for answering my question.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Vineet, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
In compressor side, from which sector company is seeing major demand?
So Vineet, I just responded to another question. Our business doesn't rely on any one sector, and what we are seeing for the last 2 to 3 years, and it's continuing on in Q1 of this year, is that we are seeing growth across all industrial sectors.
Okay. Thank you.
We have the next question from the line of Mihir Manohar from Carnelian Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for giving the opportunity. Sir, I wanted to understand, in the air compression side, specifically, we are one of the dominant players in India, and with respect to the screw air compressor technology which is there, and now we are seeing one of the competitors in this industry entering into the product of specifically of the screw air technology. So how do you see the competition panning out here, given the fact that, screw air segment is like 70% of the overall air compressor market? And my second question was on the gas side. Given the emerging opportunity in the CGD space, how are we looking at this opportunity? Yeah, yes, those were the two questions.
So, Mihir, I couldn't understand your first question. Which competitor are you talking about who's entered into screw compressor?
Pune-based player, sir.
You're talking about Kirloskar?
Yes.
Well, they've not entered. They've been in this business for a long time, right?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So they do have a presence in the market, but they have a long way to go in terms of getting their products ready and the range ready. And I don't know whether they have global aspirations like we do. So yes, we watch them, we respect them, but I'm not having sleepless nights because of that. And the second thing is, they seem to be quite strong in the gas business, which is an area that we have specifically said we will not play. Yeah. So it's not an opportunity for us.
Sure. So just to understand, to improve my understanding, my understanding is that they have launched this screw air compressor. They were not earlier present via the screw air technology. So is that understanding correct? And now they have launched it.
That's not true. They've had screw compressors before, and then they've invested in new designs and technology, but it's not like they're new to screw compressors.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Bhavin Vithalani from SBI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations for good set of numbers, sir.
Right, Bhavin. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So, Jay, if you could just help us understand what has been the increase in the pricing, especially in the domestic market in India, and how are customers reacting to such a steep hike? Because we understand that there has been some resistance across the board, not just the compressor, given the steep inflation that we are seeing.
So like I explained, Bhavin, with 42% growth, 12% is from price, right? Now, this is compared to Q1 of last year, right? But if you look at what commodity prices went up from Q1 of last year to now, till let's say March of 22, it was close to 25-30%, right? So what we have really increased is 12%. So question really is 12% excessive? Then that means we are still under recovering even at 12%, right? Whether we have to absorb it through volume and maintain at an EBITDA level, or do we maintain our profitability at the margin level? These are things that we need to be very careful in calibrating in terms of competitors' response, right? Now, I don't want to get into specifics of what price increases we have done in India with the rest of the world and all that, because that's too sensitive on information. But the fact remains that if I take the commodity price increase that has happened since the quarter of last year, I mean, that is all published information. It's not my own kind of a nightmarish projection. We have recovered only 40% of that.
I mean, despite that, maintaining the gross margin, it seems really a commendable job on the design front or value engineering front. I think that is really commendable from a company standpoint. The second question is, especially in the domestic market, if you could give us flavor on the two sub-segments. One is the portable compressor segment, which is both that goes into the infrastructure as well as waterway. And second, on the oil-free compressor side, we had mentioned about additional products that we have been introducing and deepening our presence here. And alongside, we understand the leader in the market is facing a lot of constraint on the supply chain side, and the lead times on the deliveries have gone up considerably. So are we benefiting from that?
So on construction and mining, if I look at the whole portable business split into construction, mining, and whatever, construction mining has done very well, as much as it competes strong in terms of growth with the industrial. So it's been a very strong performance, and the fact that there is a lot of infrastructure investment priority by the government, there is a trickle down impact, and I expect that as long as the government continues down this path of investment, there will be a continuing demand for these products. That's one part of the story. The other part of the story is the water well market has really hit the bottom, and it's in a very poor shape. It's not that we are on top of the market. We know how many machines have been sold. We know our share of the market has increased, but the market itself has kind of got into a paralysis. And the main reason is because fuel prices have gone so high, it is no longer economical for farmers to be drilling bore wells. And their circumstances have been saved to some extent by the fact that there's been good monsoon, right? So if the monsoons weren't good, then probably the demand would have been still stronger in spite of the diesel prices, because then that's basically sustenance, right? So these are environmental periodic challenges that are there, but the product itself that we have launched has got outstanding response. I mean, that's the key thing. And therefore, when this market comes back, we believe that we will be in an extremely strong situation. And that's what we are working on. But having said that, that product has got some very good traction in some of our international markets, so which is a positive thing. On oil free, we are continuing to grow. It's also had a good quarter. I wouldn't put the negative of a competitor as a positive for us. I mean, it's a very strong competitor. Lead time challenges are there for everyone. So I wouldn't take that as any. They may have been one or two orders here and there that we gained because of our ability to deliver, but I don't think in a technically sensitive product like oil-free, customers are going to make a decision purely on delivery. So I don't see that as a big advantage for them.
This last question from my side, if we were to request you to crystal gaze next 4 quarters, would a mid-teens growth for the consolidated entity, in your view, be realistic, aggressive, or conservative?
You got to state the question again, Bhavan. I didn't fully get it.
Oh, sorry, let me repeat. If we were to request you to crystal gaze next 4 quarters, which is from second quarter of this year to second quarter of FY24, a mid-teens revenue growth for the consolidated entity, in your view, would it be conservative, aggressive, or realistic assumption?
I think the... it's a good question, but it's a very difficult question for me to answer, right? So I think Q2 will be a strong Q2, but it'll be an unfair comparison because Q2 of last year was on the back of pent up weak Q1. Yeah. Pent up demand because of a weak Q1. Yeah. So while this year's Q2 will be quite good, in comparison to Q2 of last year, it may not be as dramatic as what we have done in Q1. Yeah. So that is one step forward as far as Q2 is concerned. My concern beyond Q2 is what will be the impact of all these negative economic factors, whether it's inflation or whether it is the demand for services that will take demand away from products, the stimulus, lack of stimulus and lack of money and consumption in the hands of people. So I don't know. It's very difficult for me to say. Now, what I can say is that India for me is I don't know whether it's going to have strong growth. It will probably have reasonable growth. I'm very optimistic about our international business for the reasons that I said our share of the market is low. So I don't want to put a percentage, but you know, if I mid-teens are as a big number for me to commit to looking into the future, but it's very difficult to say at this point.
No, we understand. Thank you so much for your input, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Rahul Gujare from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. And congrats on a very good performance in the first quarter. Now, continuing with the earlier question of Bhavin, you know, on the pricing front, you know, I want to understand what is the pricing difference, you know, after taking 12% price hike. I want to understand how the other players or leading players in the industry, especially globally, have done on the pricing front. So, want to understand the kind of gap, you know, that would be there between your company and, say, Atlas in terms of pricing. Because I believe pricing will be one of the important elements of growth, especially in the international market. That's my first question.
So, it's almost impossible for me to say what percentage of price difference is there between LG and an Atlas Copco or an Ingersoll Rand. It's almost impossible to say. The price is such a dynamic thing in the market. You need to look at general trends of where we are, right? Now, when we look on a steady state basis before all this COVID-related chaos and commodity prices hit, we were, in India, we were probably 10 to 15%, maybe 10% lower than Atlas and Ingersoll Rand. In the rest of the world, we're probably 20% or so lower than 20 or 25% lower than Ingersoll Rand or an Atlas Copco. Now, what are we today? I don't know. Are we still lower? Probably we are lower, but the percentages are very hard to get. Now, if you have looked at the performance of Atlas Copco second quarter or their second quarter, which is our first quarter worldwide, there has been a significant loss of profitability due to supply chain, which basically means that their prices, their costs have gone up and they have not increased their prices. But they have gained significantly on exchange rates, right? So they compensated for that. So they had the benefit of that and they were able to do it. If you look at Ingersoll Rand's India numbers, Q1 India numbers, they have compared to the prior year, Q1 of last year, their material cost has gone up by 6%. Now, if you look at LG's case, I would say we are not so different either, right? Only if you take the India business. You know, I mean, you can't look at the standalone and you can't look at the consolidated. But if you look at the India business, we are pretty much in the same kind of a deterioration in material cost percentage. So I would then have to say that we have not kind of gone away from what that earlier parity in price was between us and our competitors. But it's still early days. We've got to understand this dynamic a little bit more.
I think that is very helpful. My second question is on, backward integration. Now, I do understand, that you're looking at integrating, manufacturing into a single campus. Could you discuss more on what is it that you're doing and how is this going to be playing out, not in terms of cost and all, but in terms of the overall manufacturing for you all? And therefore, are you looking at, more backward integration from what you exist already do? And I think continuing with that question, would all of these backward integration will be able to meet all your internal requirement, or you still need to go out and, source from elsewhere?
So there are two things. One is building a new campus that has got nothing to do with backward integration. That's an efficiency improvement, safety improvement, capacity improvement. The current city campus is bursting at its seams. We can't afford to operate the way we are operating here. So we need to go to a larger campus and have the elbow room to breathe and improve our overall efficiency. So by doing that, we will also be saving certain costs which are replicated in two locations. So that's one part of it. As far as backward integration is concerned, there are three areas of backward integration that we have done. In the order of chronology, one was our pressure vessel division, second was our foundry, and the third was our motor plant. Now, why did we do pressure vessel? We did pressure vessel because it's a safety-related component, right? Now, we were going, our strategy, our goal, at that time and now as well, is to build a business globally, right? Now, when you have a pressure vessel that if it breaks or if it bursts, it's a catastrophic failure. We can't afford to have that. Now, so we couldn't rely on the inconsistency of quality with our suppliers, and we couldn't put our brand name on that. And we could have had some disastrous consequences. So that was the reason why we did it. Now, do all of our pressure vessels ourselves? No, we don't, right? There are diluted, less technical compressors, maybe for the India market where we know what is required, how to control it. We do have suppliers for pressure. So it's not like it's 100%. Moving to the foundry is the same reason. I mean, we did it for quality. We had to have the quality for some of our castings, and we have achieved that. And today, the quality of the castings that come out of our foundry is just outstanding. So, and do we make 100% of our castings? No. There are certain castings that we buy from other foundries, right? Same thing with motors. Now, the reason why we integrated backwards into motors is to improve supply chain, improve the performance, specific power performance of our compressors, and also ensure that we don't have a cost penalty with respect to sourcing from China, and we wanted to reduce the sourcing risk of China, right? So that's what we achieved. Now, have we done all? No. Do we buy motors still from China? Yes, we do. And do we buy from Siemens? Yes, we do. So it's not like we are switching over 100%. It's very strategic pieces that we have done. So that will be, that's how it will continue into the future.
Sure. Thanks. Can you put some range in terms of internal, you know, the backward integration that manages your requirement and what you have to source externally? Across
if you're talking about percentages, it's a big, it varies from pressure vessel castings and this motor will be very different. I don't have the numbers.
Fine. I think, thanks. Maybe I can take that with you separately. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you.
Mr. Vinod Shastri, can you hear us?
Yeah. I can hear you.
You may go ahead with your question.
Sir, thanks for the opportunity, sir. I have two questions, but that is not related to the numbers, actually. What is the success? Is there any succession plan that is going within NG? Would be the first question. And the second one would be, what is the attrition rate within NG as of now, at least in the fourth quarter of 2022?
Yes, succession is a very active subject. It is being discussed. As soon as a clear plan is finalized, it is in the process of being made. Once it is finalized, I will certainly announce it, right? Both in terms of what the process as well as timing, you know. As far as attrition is concerned, you know, you need to, there's a lot of background noise. I'm not able to.
Sorry. Yeah.
Mr. Vinod, we request you to kindly go off the speakerphone as the background sound is still prominent inside the call.
Yeah.
So as far as attrition is concerned, you got to slice it at various bands. So if you take the band that is at the top floor employee level, our attrition is zero. Then if you take the attrition at the right at the top, it is marginal, almost nothing, right? Then, if you look at the middle layer, also it is not very high. But it's only in the entry-level white-collar employees in the first 5 to 6 years of their career track, there is attrition, but it's nowhere near the attrition that the IT industry is facing. Yeah, so I don't have a consolidated attrition percentage, but our regrettable attritions are very, very low.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have no further questions.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Kamlesh, you would like to make?
No, I'm fine, Kamlesh. I think I've pretty much covered what I wanted to say. I want to thank you for taking the effort to organizing this. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Fine. Thank you, everyone. With that, we conclude the call. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of Asian Market Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.